regularly scheduled meeting of the North Dakota Public.
Call this regularly scheduled meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. It's Wednesday, February 22nd, 2023. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugenhofer and Julie Fedorchek, so we have a quorum. Legislature wrapping up, but we can discuss that. Some of the scheduling that I've heard about in advance, maybe during our admin hearing. So I don't think I really have any opening comments. Commissioner Haugenhofer, do you?
No, I do not.
Commissioner Fedorchek?
I don't either.
Okay, we'll move right into our agenda then, and I'm just going to clarify, because they were on there, but consent items JF1 and 2, I believe, have been removed. There was an addition this morning, and so with that math being done, we have 24 items on the consent agenda, so plan to spend some time signing when we're done. I move approval of those 24 consent agenda items plus the previous minutes.
I would second that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just have one question on these, and this is for Randy, the telecom portfolio holder. On these and reports that we receive on this high cost universal service support, remind me what our role is.
Well, in order for them to get the high cost support, they need to have ETC status, and we are the ones responsible for granting that. So we just are in this loop.
So we just receive those reports. Do we do anything with them at all? Or what do they have to contain? Like an update on how they use the funds? Is there any? Who checks, I guess? And I don't suspect our companies of not using them appropriately, but I've always wondered, like, it feels like the federal government is just passing this up on us to sort of certify that these companies are using them as they're supposed to be. And then we just sort of
I
go along with that or say, yep, they are. I just don't know how much.
I know we don't dig into it like we might regulated utility rate case, for example, but our Director of Public Utilities is here, and he can explain a little more about what we actually do, how deep we do drill.
Telecom master.
One of the many. But anyway, so we receive these reports annually. It's a requirement for FCC that we certify to them that our companies are utilizing the funds appropriately and as per their guidelines. And we, in turn, require our utilities or our telecom utilities to file those reports certifying that they are doing so.
Okay.
I think I remember now, I think when I was in legislature, I think there's actually legislation to that effect that is the requirement that is how the PSC verifies it, is based on a certification from the company.
Okay.
Correct.
So we're covered in law.
Yes.
That this is our role in.
Yes.
Do we actually look into it at all, Victor? Do we have time or staff time to
We do review it. So, I mean, we kind of wait until we get them all in. And usually there's a few stragglers that haven't filed their certification that we have to bug a little bit. But we send out a notification that, hey, you need to get these in by a certain date. We'll follow up with any kind of stragglers. And then once we receive all of them, we file a report, and it actually comes before you. I think usually we put it on consent, but it could be on regular agenda as well. But it's a summary of these companies have all certified to us. We are therefore certifying that they are compliant with the requirements of that universal service funding. We don't usually do any data requests to verify the information. But
so, and just not to belabor this, just quickly, is there sort of some high-level requirements for this universal service fund, or is it really detailed, like how they're supposed to be using it?
The requirements at the FCC level are pretty detailed as far as how they can use it, and what these certifications we receive are saying we are in compliance with the FCC's requirements.
Okay. So do you ever do a random check?
We haven't. I've been doing this, at least.
Do you think there would be any benefit to do a random?
We could. It would be challenging because telecom companies aren't accustomed to us asking questions.
Yeah.
So it would be very clunky, but it's certainly permissible.
It might be interesting sometime to just even do a summary of how the funds are being used and what benefit they're having, because it's a lot of money that's being spent by the feds to help people be more connected, or is it what? I'm not even aware of how those funds really go to benefit North Dakotans myself. Sure. And there's probably more funding coming through this, through the IRA and IIJA in the future, or not? Is that a different mechanism?
There are some for broadband and things like that.
Yeah. Anyway, might be something that we would like even work with Band on to say, you guys should summarize for us and ask them to kind of pull the information together, and then we could jointly do some public information about it or something down the road.
Sure.
Put in the idea bucket. I think it's something for us to really consider as far as it, what the amount of money that's being being brought in and utilized. I would assume, I don't like to use that word, that through their own audit process, there's some verification there. So I think the process might be simpler than we anticipate. We don't know. But I think it's more than an idea. It's a talking point to consider. That's all for me. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thanks, Victor.
Okay, moving into the regular agenda, I move the commission adopt the ex parte cease and desist order in Public Service Commission, Bright Sound Communications Incorporated, complaint case number PU-22-393.
Second.
So on October 20th of last year, 2022, the commission received an informal complaint from a customer of Northwest Communications Cooperative alleging a violation by Bright Sound Communications, and we got another very similar complaint 4 days later. Ultimately, there were at least six other similar instances, and in each one, subscribers reported that they received sales calls from a representative of Bright Sound claiming to be affiliated with that subscriber's long-distance provider. The callers urged the customers to switch their long-distance services to Bright Sound due to their current long-distance provider no longer offering long-distance service. In each instance, the current providers confirmed to our staff that they have no affiliation with Bright Sound, nor did they have any plans to discontinue long-distance services. So in late November, advocacy staff served a notice of cease and desist, and the notice provided 20 days from date of service to file a response and request a hearing. On December 15th, Bright Sound provided a letter to the commission that it has ceased marketing in North Dakota. They said they had outsourced marketing to another firm to acquire long-distance customers, and that firm had violated approved marketing rules, and Bright Sound canceled the contract. They also indicated that they would do whatever is needed to resolve the unresolved issues. Then, barely a month later, on January 17th, advocacy staff sent an information request to Bright Sound. An interrogatory such as this must be responded to within 10 business days after service. As of February 7th, no response was provided. So on February 6th, advocacy staff communicated with a customer of Reservation Telephone Cooperative concerning continued misrepresentations. The customer stated that they began receiving bills from Bright Sound without signing up for service. And staff submits that Bright Sound's misrepresentations have continued. So based upon the notice provided in November, the fact that no request for a hearing was received, and the continued allegations of misrepresentations and fraudulent marketing activities within the state of North Dakota, with this order, the Public Service Commission would deem an emergency exists, and this order finds that there is a good cause to issue an ex parte cease and desist order to protect the public from continued misrepresentation and fraudulent activities by Bright Sound.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
So, Randy, can you clarify?
Sorry, can you clarify the next steps? What if they don't provide a response to the interrogatory and they don't request a hearing?
Based on this, they need to cease and desist. If they want that overturned, they need to request a hearing.
Okay. But we already told them to cease and desist, and they didn't.
Well, that was a notice, basically, that it was kind of a notice that one, an official one, would follow if they didn't cease and desist or request a hearing or do something. That was really from staff, more than us.
I see. So if they, and then if they continue to ignore this, then we can take further action for penalties, I would assume.
I presume we could take action for penalties, but with this, they are out of business here until they do something to try to overturn this.
Okay. And Victor, if they ignore this and continue to do business?
We could issue penalties. So
okay. This
is, and just to kind of clarify, procedurally, advocacy staff filed a request for the commission to issue a cease and desist order. The commission did not issue that cease and desist order at that time, but they served the notice at that time. So they were on notice that, hey, someone has an issue, we need to respond. They filed that initial response, seemingly indicating that the practices were going to stop. We got evidence that says otherwise, and where advocacy came back to the commission asking them to now issue the cease and desist. And the cease and desist stops them from being able to market new services in North Dakota. They can continue providing the existing services that they're providing to customers.
Do we have any good contact information for this company? Like, can we call them or email them and get a response?
I don't have an email address or a phone number that I've been able to get through to them on. They do have a registered agent in North Dakota that we've been serving these notices to.
And are they received? Are they like certified mail? So we know that
we send certified mail.
And so we know they've been getting
those
notices.
And they did respond to the November notice that they had suspended activity and discontinued work with that contractor.
Correct.
So, I mean, that very much confirmed that they had received that one.
And how did we get that information from them?
They filed a letter.
A letter? And there's, sure be nice to get a phone number for these folks.
I have reached out to the company and then have made some contact with them, but they, at this point in time, had failed to respond with any manager or any principal manager of the company.
Mm. So who is the registered agent? What's their role? Who are they?
Registered agent is the person designated to receive service of legal documents.
Okay, but what role do they have in the company? And how do they exist? Like, are they with the Secretary of State's office, or how do we know about them, I guess?
In order to register as a company, you have to provide a registered agent, which provides a person that can be served with legal documents. And their role is to notify the company of having.
And they are registered at the Secretary of State.
If the registered agent is also a commercial registered agent, then they would be a business that would receive service from the Secretary of State. Not always is a registered agent registered with the Secretary of State.
So is this registered agent an attorney, usually? A local attorney or counsel? Or?
Frequently, it depends on the corporate structure. For example, sole proprietor, registered agent is the sole proprietor normally. For smaller companies, they'll usually designate a member of the company as the registered agent. Larger corporations tend to hire commercial registered agents to receive service of their documents, and they tend to have different registered agents in every state in which they do business.
And so, where is this company based?
This company is based in Florida.
Okay.
But they have service in multiple states.
And this registered agent is in Florida, or do we not know?
We do know, but I don't have it on me at this exact moment. I can provide that to you.
There's a couple of companies that provide that service for a multitude of out-of-state-based companies.
Oh, so this registered agent is a contractor?
Yes.
Oh. Well, they seem very elusive and hard to, like, they might not even get this, right? I mean, the registered agent will, but who knows if that company does. Is there any way to request from that registered agent that we get a company contact?
We usually serve this via certified mail, so we know that the registered agent has received this.
And can we ask in that mail, can we have a cover letter that says or can we include in the order that they need to contact us with a name and number of the president of the company or somebody who's responsible, not just this registered agent? I mean, because they're out there doing stuff. I mean, we hear about this from our other companies, and this feels like just one step too just formal and not practical enough. Like, we're doing what needs to be done, but are we getting action back from this company to let them know, like, we need to know who you are, you need to stop what you're doing, we're not monkeying around anymore?
I don't feel like we've been monkeying around. We've built a case, and we're now taking our role as a commission, telling them to cease and desist marketing in North Dakota. So I guess I don't feel like we've been monkeying around. And if when we tell them to cease and desist, there's not much left for them in North Dakota then. So I don't know how we make them respond to that. Say they're sorry or something. If they're just going to accept that and just cease and desist and decide they don't care to do business in North Dakota anymore. I don't know how we really make them respond to it.
Well, and don't take this as I don't feel like staff has been doing enough. That's not what I mean here. I think the company is ignoring us. And they ignored us this fall and continued to do stuff. I would say maybe they even lied based on what you've got in here, that they were going to stop doing it, and they didn't, because we're still getting reports that they are. So I don't know. I'm just looking at trying to find somebody who's responsible other than this elusive registered agent that we might be able to get to say, like, what's going on, and we're going to, and who would we even find? How would we even carry out a penalty if we needed to, without knowing who to send it to, other than this?
Well, we're doing our steps procedurally on this, and you guys have done a good job on the next step, is they need to stop doing business in North Dakota. So,
the subsequent steps would be us taking action if they do violate the cease and desist, and bringing forward the weight of the law on them.
Through the registered agent that doesn't respond.
Well, the registered agent is considered the person who receives on behalf of the company. So it's as if the head of the company has received it once you provide it legally to them. So after that, then you could subsequently bring forward criminal penalties as well as fines as well, get court injunctions and collections.
Well, all right. They ignored us the last time. I guess I don't have a lot of faith that they're going to do anything differently this time around.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission approve the Falkirk Mining Company's request for a variance in the 10-year revegetation responsibility period for 4.5 acres of reclaimed cropland located in the southwest quarter of Section 22, Township 146 North, Range 82 West in McLean County, where revegetation was delayed until a topsoil stockpile, 0.2 acres, and a temporary haul road of 4.3 acres were removed and reclaimed. In Falkirk Mining Company variance permit NAFK-8405, application case number RC-23-48.
Second.
On February 3rd, Falkirk filed a request for this variance from the 10-year revegetation responsibility period. A variance from the 10-year revegetation responsibility period will allow two areas, the 0.2-acre topsoil stockpile and the 4.3-acre temporary haul road to be bond released as part of a package totaling 286.7 acres. These 4.5 acres were reclaimed in 2008 and 2011, while the adjacent lands were reclaimed from 1992 all the way through 2012. The 4.5 acre variance request is part of this larger tract that has 144 acres that's located in the southwest corridor of Section 22, and it's part of an overall bond release that is 287 acres, and that's the total 287 acres is located in that quarter and in one adjacent quarter just to the south of it. The reclaimed county, and there is a reclaimed county road that divides these two quarters. The variance areas were inspected on multiple dates, including the official bond release inspection, which was October 26th of last year. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of the request and recommends approval, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Commissioner Haugenhofer.
Thank you. I move the commission approve the amended request to approve the financial assurance filed on February 2nd, 2023 in Altel Incorporated buys into wind project, Oliver and Morton, decommissioning planned and cost, case number PU-12-241, and further move the commission approve the amended request to approve the financial assurance filed on February 2nd, 2023 in Altel's Incorporated Bison 3 wind project, Oliver and Morton, decommissioning plan and cost, case number PU-18-232.
Second.
On October 2nd, 2019, the commission approved Altel's decommissioning plan and cost estimate for phase two of the Bison Wind Energy Center, Bison 2, and for a total amount of over $5 million. On the same date, the commission also approved Altel's decommissioning plan and cost estimate for phase three of Bison Wind Energy Center, Bison 3. So Bison 2 and 3 consists of 35 turbines with a nameplate capacity of 105 megawatts. The facilities are 10 years into their operational life, and they are required to post decommissioning financial assurance with the commission. So on February 2nd, we did receive an amended request to approve two letters of credit with Bank of America for the full decommissioning amounts for each of the facilities. And the letter also contains The filing also contains letters from both Altel and Minnesota Power stating that they both agree to be responsible for the decommissioning of the facilities. And if the letters of credit are automatically renewed every year, and if they are not renewed, the commission must provide a 90-day notice. So they have met all the requirements for their decommissioning updating.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order in Montana Dakota Utilities Company's Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rates case number PU22-401.
Second.
On November 1st, MDU filed changes to rates under its Renewable Resource Cost Adjustment Rate 55 tariff for their electrical services. On November 30th, the commission did issue a notice of opportunity, and no responses were received. So under this rider, MDU recovers costs associated with its renewable generation resource modifications or additions approved by the commission, but are not currently recovered in their retail rates. So under this rider, the projects that are related are the Thunder Spirit Wind Projects 1 and 2, Cedar Hills Wind Project, the Diamond Willow Wind Project, and subsequent repowering. The updates also reflect a projected over-recovered revenue balance, and finally, the updated rates reflect a partial levelization of production tax credits. So with all this, the billing impact on the updated rider rate for a residential customer using 894 kilowatts per hour will see a decrease of 49 cents per month. So upon review, the investment and the associated costs with the projects I previously stated do qualify for the recovery. Their incurred costs are reasonable and prudent, and the renewable cost recovery rider tariffs are just and reasonable.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Sherry, do you recall, I know it's a decrease, but what will the amount be for the average residential? Do you know what that rate, like average per month?
I think it was 49 cents per month.
That's the reduction. So what would the amount, like the month per month be? Is it a couple bucks, $4, a dollar? I don't see that in the memo. And I don't recall that from the filing.
Were you asking what the current rider charge is?
Yeah. Once the 49 cents is reduced, what will the average customer rate be for, you know, monthly amount? Mm-hmm. I know it depends on the use, but...
I don't have that information in front of me.
I don't think it gets... Because it's a significant rider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's $15 million. All right. Well, I can check that out.
I'll get that information.
Okay. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern States Power Company Customer Credit DOE Settlement 2021 Application Case Number PU 23-044.
Second.
On February 2nd, Northern States Power Company filed a petition for approval to refund to the customers the 13th settlement payment arising from the United States Department of Energy not accepting nuclear waste in breach of the Federal Nuclear Waste Policy Act. NSP requests to either fund this payment back to customers as a separate line item on customers' bill by August 1st, 2023, and the refund of the payment as a one-time credit back to the customers using the bill credit rider for the period from April 1st, 2023 through March 31st, 2023. They estimate that the one-time bill credit is to be $5.62 per residential customers. Though comments and requests for a hearing must be received by March 29th, 2023 in writing, and if deemed appropriate, the Commission can determine these matters without a hearing. And I just want to note, we staff did work with NSP on regarding the one-time credit. In the past, it's been quite cumbersome for them to run this, and we did, if you recall last year, we did approve this change. So hopefully this will be a much smoother system for them, crediting back to their customers this one-time bill credit. So with this being said, looking for approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you. I move the Commission adopt the interim order in Montana Dakota Utilities Electrical Service Agreement Applied Blockchain Approval, case number PU22-371.
Second.
On September 21st, MDU filed an application for approval of their electrical service agreement, ESA, with Applied Blockchain. The agreement provides that the customer would take electrical service from MDU under the high density demand response rate 45 schedule. On October 27th, 2022, the Commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, and the notice, for written comments and hearings. And on December 8th, Marathon Petroleum Company did file comments on the proposed ESA. Applied Blockchain filed a letter in support of the ESA. And so what this regards is MDU proposes to serve the Applied Blockchain at a location near Ellendale. And Montana Dakota Utilities was granted a Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity by the Commission on February 8th. The Applied Blockchain facility is 180 megawatt interruptible load forecast to use approximately 1.4 billion kilowatt hours per year. Applied Blockchain on January 24th letter noticed that they desire to take the service under this rate in mid-February of this year. We met as a commission, and we believe it is the best interest of the customers and the parties to approve the proposed electrical service agreement on an interim basis, subject to refund or additional charges, with a hearing and development to this case to be completed within the next 90 days. Marathon is a large energy customer that may be substantially impacted by the margin sharing application and request an opportunity to review and participate in this proceeding. So just to reemphasize, we as a commission do believe it's the best interest to of the customer and parties to approve this ESA on an interim basis.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That ends my portfolio.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Chair. I move the Commission adopt the order on consent agreement in Montana Dakota Utilities Company Thunder Spirit Wind Project, citing application case number PU-17-192.
Second.
So MDU owns and operates Thunder Spirit. It is a 155.5 megawatt wind energy conversion facility in Adams County, North Dakota. The Century Code requires that by December 31st of 2021, every wind energy conversion facility that was issued a certificate of site compatibility prior to June 5th of 2016 must be equipped with functioning light mitigating technology systems. The commission issued a certificate for site compatibility to Thunder Spirit prior to June 5th of 2016, so they were obligated to meet that deadline of December 31st of 2021 for the light mitigating technology. They did come to us in, October 5th of 2020 and petitioned for an extension. We granted them that extension for about a year. They were going to have an extra year to have the light mitigating technology, so their new deadline was December 31st of 2022, and they wanted to explore installation of a different technology called light intensity dimming solutions, or LIDS technology. So they pursued that a little bit, but on July 27th of 2021, they abandoned that plan because they saw that the FAA was not moving very rapidly to approve that new technology. So then on August 17th of that year, they began the ADLS licensing process with the FAA. In October of 2021, they began procuring the ADLS equipment. That must have been 2022. That's an error I just see in this order. I got to correct that. It should say on October 13th of 2022, I think. Well, maybe not. They began procuring that equipment. Actually, they might have procured it the year before. Never mind. Sorry about that. They had it. So then on October 31st of 2022, they completed construction of the ADLS at Thunder Spirit. They tested it and completed testing on December 30th of 2022. So they were kind of in order to complete it, but they didn't get final FAA approval until January 4th of 2023, which is 4 days after the deadline. So they did confirm to us on January 6th that they had the system operational on January 4th, which was 4 days late. Staff negotiated with them this consent agreement that calls for a $2,000 penalty for being 4 days late, which is approximately $500 per day. That's in line with sort of the rate of others who missed the deadline based on the circumstances here, and they did have, you know, put forth a good faith effort to meet the deadline. So I think it's an appropriate penalty, and I'm prepared to support it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I'm also going to support it, but I do think it's kind of on the low side. They were warned when we granted the extension that at least one or some of us were very doubtful that LIDS technology was going to get approved by FAA. But of course they knew better, and so, you know, they talked us into the extension and subjected all their neighbors to looking at the lights for an extra year. And then even when they finally believed that approval from a federal agency, and I mean, who's shocked anymore when the federal agency goes slow? But even after the extra delay, they still had to cut it right to the edge and then couldn't quite make it. And so I'm going to support it. I'm sure going to be expecting that it is not something that they seek recovery for in the rate case. But I just do find it frustrating that they didn't just do the ADLS in the first place. Could have been done a year ago already.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Okay, well, we have a... I'll wrap up with just a few announcements here, and then we'll see. There's no press in the room, but we'll see if any are calling in. But before we go to that, a few announcements that I wanted to make regarding our schedule. This afternoon, we have an informal hearing with Otter Tail Power on actually two cases, PU 22-429, that's their renewable resource cost recovery, and PU-23-27, which is their fuel cost adjustment. And so we'll have those this afternoon. Our next regularly scheduled meeting is Wednesday, March 8th, which is kind of a normal Wednesday morning meeting. I do also want to point out, I feel we're close enough now, March 14th, which is a Tuesday, we have the first of our four scheduled Summit Carbon Transport Pipeline hearings. That one will be here in Bismarck at 8:30 a.m. over in the Heritage Center in the Russell Reed Auditorium. And as long as I'm on the subject, I'm just going to point out subsequent four scheduled hearings on that are March 28th in Gwinner, April 11th in Wahpeton, and May 9th in Linton. That concludes my announcements. Is anyone on the line, any members of the press online with questions?
If there are any members of the press on the phone, press.
Oh, and we'll stand in recess for questions from the press. Thank you.